And there we are. Hello. All right. Sorry about that. So tonight, March 27, 2024, we are talking about movement therapy, dance, and music. This is part of this year's podcast team. We're exploring alternative ways to heal. We're exploring natural, non-invasive healing methods that can complement your routine and help you navigate stress, finding balance, and restoring your optimal health naturally. Now, I do not diagnose any conditions, nor do I prescribe substance or perform medical treatment, nor interfere with the treatment of a licensed medical professional. It is recommended that you see a licensed physician or a licensed healthcare professional for any physical or psychological ailment or conditions you may have. I'm simply exploring natural methods that have been around for a long time. And out of the curiosity, how do those fit in the practice here at the Redo Wellness Center? We will continue our search into this alternative medicine that requires little cost or training, and it can be done by everyone, which is the key element here. Sometimes there are things that are specifically targeted for some people or some certain illness. However, these alternative therapies, alternative healing ideas, are there to show you that perhaps supplementing what you're already doing for yourself might make the journey easier or faster. So, and also what's important is that you don't need to be sick to be enjoying or benefiting from these alternative therapies. I don't encourage you to drop anything that is ongoing as with your medical treatment, but this might be basic ideas to complement any ongoing therapy as a way also to stay balanced and healthy. So you don't need to be sick to watch this. You might actually find that things make a lot of sense and will help you on your spiritual introspection or journey. More and more traditional medicine recognize the benefit of these alternative therapies to manage stress and pain in addition to current treatments. But mostly the idea is to show you how they can be beneficial, sick or not sick, right? So why do we use them? Well, I'll give you an example. I had a friend who was getting older and she was starting to lose her balance and tripping over her feet. She was spending a lot of time sitting down and not actively using her muscle. But she's also, you know, going to the gym. She didn't feel like she belonged there. She didn't think that there was, you know, her crowd kind of thing. She felt out of place in the gym because she felt too old for it. So she's not sick, but she's also having difficulty balancing herself. So I suggested that she gave Tai Chi a try. And it worked wonders for her balance, her muscle tone. She walked better. She developed a better posture, but it also at the same time didn't just benefit her physical body, it benefited her mental and emotional state because she started making friends, going out of the house, and it improved her mood. And it helped her pull away from the depression that she was in from losing her husband. The social aspect of practicing Tai Chi was an unplanned beneficial effect of bettering her mood and motivating her. So it's not just about always the physical aspect that we're looking at. As a holistic practitioner, I like to look at individual from all of their different aspects, their mental body, physical body, emotional body, and spiritual body. And the reason why we're talking about movement therapy is because it includes a wide range based on either Western or Eastern ideas. And they all claim to improve health and well-being. So movement is motion in all aspects of life. We're always continuously in movement. If you look at the wind, if the wind stands still, there's no wind. If a river stands still, it dies off, right? There's movement all around us. Life on Earth is all about change. And if we can adapt to this change, we can definitely enjoy or stay on this planet a lot more than not, right? So there are countless variations of movement therapy. So I'm not here to talk or promote one specific one. I'm just going to tonight explore all the different aspects of movement that can be beneficial for your health in general or improving any aspects of you that you feel needs improvement. Some use movement as a form of psychotherapy that can help express deep emotional issues. Others are approaching and incorporate the play aspect and the effect of gravity on the body, while others encourage spontaneous, expressive, individualistic movements. So there's no set ways as long as you're moving. And what makes music more music kind of helps your body move, right? There's a rhythm to music. So our body will naturally be swayed or, you know, start moving. Looking at ritual dances, for example, as a form of movement, ritual dances play a very important role in many cultures throughout the ages. It focuses on a movement as a connection to the subtle energy of the body and the mind that links with that music. While recently visiting New Orleans in the Louis Armstrong Park, there was a group of people there learning tribal dancing. And other than the people teaching the actual activity, it was a bunch of tourists that was there, and they just wanted to try something different, something that moved them. And the idea is that it's not like ballroom dancing where you have all these specific steps you need to follow, where you have to count and keep. Movement therapy is all about movement. So if you say, well, I'm not a good dancer, I don't know how to dance, it's okay. Very much in the form of ritual dancing, the dance is there to help us move to the rhythm. And it's however you move that is okay. So there's no wrong way of doing it. The music in certain cases also helps us reconnect with our culture, with our roots. There's specific music that will bring us home. For example, I'm French Canadian, so there's a certain type of music that reminds me of home immediately. And that usually comes up more around the holidays kind of thing, because there are certain musics that we would listen to at certain times of the year. So there's a strong connection that not just our physical body has to music, but also our entire being, our history, our memories, and our emotions, right? I was walking somewhere with a friend, and all of a sudden this music's playing and there's tears running down her face. I'm like, what's going on? And she's like, this played at my father's funeral. So there are certain connections that are being made at different level of our being that are disconnected to music and movement. So while this music is helping us recall memories, feelings, and emotion, brings to the surface things that we need to examine and deal with. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that later, but there's the ritual dancing, but there's also modern movement. Now, if any of you watch older movies, because in recent movies, it's a lot of hip hop and it's a lot of obviously whatever is current, right? So for the music, the movie to be current, it's using current music, current dancing movements. But modern movement therapy developed from dance movement as the enjoyable effect that it's adapted for therapeutic discipline and divided into many subgroups. But let's talk about, for example, White Christmas. Inside of the movie, it's a musical show, and they have several types of dancing. So one looks a lot like ballroom dancing, and then there's another one that's more more emotion music, so very expressive dance move to convey emotion and strengthen the scenes, right, with the overall move, and it links to the mood of the scene, right? So the costumes are different, the colors is different, but they're using this to convey something to us. In the same way, when we have to get out of our box, right? I would say that the box is the worst thing that can happen to someone. we're not made with cookie cutters. And so we are all different. And we've been living in a society that has a lot of do's and don'ts, right? And so we think that because we can't fit in that box, then we don't belong into it. And so therefore, there's no use in us trying because we don't fit. the whole idea of this modern movement of dancing is to allow us to be interpretive dancing, to not have a set of steps that we need to perform, to just move with the flow of your emotion and the music and mixing it all together. It creates amazing scenes, but it's also something that anyone can do, right? So because you don't need to go to a dance school to learn certain moves, or not that I'm saying there's anything wrong with that, if you want to learn a foxtrot, or, you know, it's fine. But the idea behind this dance movement therapy, or the movement therapy, is to allow you to move within your capacity, to allow emotions to come to the surface and be dealt with. So there is an actual thing that is called dance movement therapy specifically, and it's the psychotherapeutic use of movement and dance for emotional, cognitive, social, behavioral, and physical conditions. So as you can see, it pretty much looks at every kind of special aspect a person might be having, any kind of blockages or difficulty, and it gets resolved through this dance movement. The dance therapists usually work in medical settings, rehabilitation centers, nursing home, disease prevention centers. So this particular dance movement therapy is follows a certain protocol, and you deal with professionals. So there's the aspect of you can dance at home, but should dancing and music be something that uplifts your spirit? This is a way you can get through therapy that conventional therapy may not be working for you. Right? The therapy is holistic and based on the notion that the body and the mind interact, and that the change in movement will affect the total functioning of your body, which makes sense, right? If you're tight, if your muscles are tight, you can't move, right? This is why we stretch before we exercise, to allow the movement to be more fluid and to allow our muscles to move in ways that we don't necessarily use every day. This dance movement therapy emerged as a field in 1940, and it was based on early innovators that were accomplished dancers, and they began to realize the benefit of using dance and movement as a form of psychotherapy. So this holistic approach to healing is based on the holistic, right? So not just the body, but also the mind and the spirit, as they become inseparable, right? They're interconnected. This was something that I learned a few years back. I thought that someone who suffered from depression is sad, right? However, after looking into it, I realized that depression can also cause physical pain, because, you know, you're thinking, okay, it's a mental illness. It's all in my head. How is it affecting the physical body? But it's interconnected, because your thoughts are not flowing freely, because you are stuck in a low vibration phase or a dark place. Your body feels these vibrations created by your mind, and so therefore reverberate into your body and create consequences to your body. So when they realize this, that's when they realize, okay, well, if the body is stiff, if the body is in pain, and we allow the body to relax and allow the body to move, maybe, just maybe, it will have the reverse effect, right? So in the first place, it's your mind affecting your body. Maybe if we can affect the body, it will affect the mind. And so this is the whole idea of, you know, using the movement for the therapy, because if one affects the other one, then vice versa, the effect will be also transferred over, right? That's the theory behind it. So dance movement therapy is also very suitable for older patients who cannot move well or are confined to wheelchairs, as long as they're able to move to the music's rhythm. And you can do so in the chair. I mean, who hasn't tapped their feet while listening to music, or tap on the steering wheel while driving? There's movement, there's a reaction. And what they're trying to do through the dance movement therapy is you're trying to connect these bodies, right? So you're trying to connect, reconnect maybe, create a link between the physical body, the emotional body, mental body, and spiritual body. We're trying to re-energize these links that have maybe died off, dried up, whatever you want to call it. And it's allowing us to open a door that was closed, basically. Any kind of therapy, you can go and sit in therapy's office for hours if the connection isn't there, you're going to spend a lot of time going there. There's no connection. These alternative therapies are there to try and reconnect you to the other bodies. This dissociation that you're suffering from can be reconnected, in not just through medication, but other things as well. And maybe, hopefully, accelerate the process so you get better sooner. Yes? And the dance movement therapy can be applied to one-on-one or group sessions. So it's not something that needs to be outrageously expensive, because usually group session will be a lot cheaper than one-on-one. There are various schools, and they will work off of two different theory, two different very, very different guys. So you have the Freudian approach, in which the patients are encouraged to uncover deeply hidden feelings. And the Jungian method works with the analysis of the recurring thoughts and dreams. But either way, both allow you to connect with what's inside. So just dancing for the sake of dancing will keep you healthy, will keep you strong. But the idea behind the movement therapy is to go deeper and to either analyze your mental state and your messages that you're receiving from your subconscious, or analyzing what emotion is trapped. So it's not just about recognizing that there's emotions in there, but actually dealing with them so that they can be freed. Yes? There's also in the dance movement therapy a nonverbal mirroring technique. Now, this technique is used as well as movement of improvisation and experimentation. So that's when someone will play a certain music and they will say, what do you feel when you're hearing this? Well, how do you want to move, right? In some of my workshops, I play with the music, and I wouldn't say that I do movement therapy per se, but I introduce people to these different techniques and allowing them to experience. What does that feel like? How does that come about? And how does that play in awakening your emotion and allowing you to, it's very bright, allowing you to tap into what's hidden inside. So the therapy will work into four stages. So first there's a preparation. You kind of explain the workshop, and then you allow people to warm up, right? To stretch, to be able to move. And the emphasis is based on free creative movement. So there's no expectation of what that should look like. If you want to stomp on the floor, if you want to twirl, if you want to jump, anything is permissible. It's whatever this music allows you to feel. And for some people, the same music will create very varying different expression of what's inside. So the idea is to stick with it until you're able to bring up what is it that it's triggering within you. And then we evaluate that. We can do that one-on-one, or we can do that as a group. But I like working with groups. Because when you work with group, you realize, oh, someone else is feeling something similar to me. Someone else experienced something similar to me. And when it's the time to experience new things, you know, we hate to feel like we're the odd one out, right? We hate to feel like no one else is thinking about it this way. No one else is feeling it this way. So when you're able to share as a group, certain people can express very different emotions, but the process might be similar. And that allows people to free themselves in their exploration, right? And that's what's important. It's the idea of freeing yourself from a certain ritual and allowing to just be in the moment of that sound, of that music. It's very freeing. Because since there's no expectation, you can't do no wrong. So people who have high anxiety, people who have performance issues, they relate really, really well to this type of approach because they can't mess it up. And so all they need to do is just give it a try and then see what comes out. So I think that I personally like it because I deal with people with a strong, strong anxiety, and this is freeing for them. knowing that there's no outcomes, no expectation. You just be yourself, just feel, just go with that flow that's you know, this music is bringing out in you, and see what comes up. So this movement thing is not new, right? We're doing it, we're talking dance movement, so we're talking about music. But the East always comes to the West for some reason, yes. The sun rises in the East and they started a lot of things over there. And we were able to tap into some of their knowledge, some of their experience. So in the East, you have yoga, Qigong and Tai Chi, which are wildly practiced spiritual techniques with noted therapeutic benefits, right? And so because it became, people are starting doing it in the park. Yoga studios are like mushrooms right now. They're everywhere. We have been realizing this, you know, when you look at Tai Chi in the park, you're like, this looks cool. This looks relaxing. They move. I think I could move that way. Right. Some people think, oh, yoga is too complicated. It's too difficult. There's no way I could, you know, I could bend over like that. So when it comes to Tai Chi, it's often, I often see groups of all ages, and everybody is just following these fluid movements, which are calming in effect. And then Qigong is also a movement. Yes. So between these three things, we can definitely increase our health and prolong our life. So let's look at yoga. Now, I'm a trained yoga teacher, and I think it's important. I want to talk to you about a little bit about the yoga part, because most of us here in the Western hemisphere, in the West anyway, we think yoga as, you know, you go do yoga, you get your mat, you do your movement, lasts about an hour and you go home. But yoga is so much, much more than that. And I think that money ruins a lot of things. And I think that we need to understand that yoga was never meant to be just movement. Yoga is a spiritual practice of, and includes movement in it. And it, in fact, it has eight pillars. So the eighth foundation of what yoga is. So the first of the foundation, and I mean, I'm going to say first, second, I'm going to keep the asanas, which is the positions, for the end, because I want to talk more about those. But the first pillar is yama. And yama is moral discipline or moral vows that a person will follow. It's kind of five social ethics. And it's kindness, truthfulness, honesty, moderation or self-restraint, and generosity. And then the second pillar of yoga is niyama. Niyama is the positive observance, five personal ethics. So there's five social ones that everybody should follow. But personally, you should keep yourself pure, content, discipline, and do some self-study or inner study, introspection, and surrender to the divine. And then you have pranayama. Prana is the breathing techniques. You're breathing in order to uncover your light within you. And so there's different types of breathing that clear blockages, calm your body, refresh your body, warms your body. So all these different breathing techniques exist. So you're supposed to be mixing in all of these things into the yoga practice. Pratyahara is the introspection part. So yoga understands that, yes, you're a body, and so you have an external, but where's our mental inside? Where's our emotional inside? Where's the spiritual inside? So yoga recognizes that there has to be a connection, not just to your external body, but to everything else that is a part of you, and into the introspection part. Then there's dharana, and that's the focus, attention, an act of effortless concentration, being able to focus, yes? But that's not meditation, because the meditation part is the dhyana, And it's dropping all efforts and letting go into the meditation. And all of these practices, along with the asanas, lead you to samadhi, the bliss or enlightenment, the complete harmony with the universal consciousness. So in essence, asanas, the postures, which the main yoga practice in the West, is just one of these eight structures that helps us connect. So is then just doing yoga posture not good enough? I'm not saying that. I mean, yoga, the yoga posture, the asanas, they will allow you to develop your ability for physical stability, your stamina. It'll give you strength and it will purify the body. But the focus is too much on just that. And also there seems to be a competition with all the social media, you know, people showing off doing very, very complicated and hard poses, which I think in a way makes some people think, well, I can't do that because they can't get there, which is normal. It's just like watching someone run a marathon and saying, I can't do that. Well, no, not right here, right now. You haven't trained for it. Like, there's a lot of training that goes into, you know, running a marathon. So it's important to prepare yourself. But we need to take the competition out of it, the showmanship out of it, and to stay focused on a personal spiritual practice. So you shouldn't be doing yoga to impress anyone. Your positions should be easy and comfortable for your body, and it should help you connect with the mind and the spirit. It should be done in a practice of connection. In ancient times, the asana practice was meant more for cultivating the physical and the mental stability and the easiness that is required for the practice of meditation. So it was just an easement into the meditation, which is the seventh limb. Because asana literally means to sit. And you're supposed, through your posture in yoga, to learn your steadiness, but at the same time, your easiness. So I would say that if there's a way that I would explain it personally, is I would say that before doing meditation, I like doing yoga because then my body feels heard. I am able to stretch. I'm able to work out all the muscle aches. I feel at the end relaxed. So you shouldn't, after your yoga session, feel tired or exhausted. You should feel relaxed. Your muscles should feel okay. I was stretched. I was heard. I practice, you know, I'm more flexible. And then you can chill. And then you can get into your actual meditation. I would say that the most important position, actually, in yoga is Shavasana. So for any of you who's practiced yoga, Shavasana is the last pose that is after every kind of yoga you can take. Normally, you will finish with Shavasana. Why would you finish with Shavasana? Because that's the point where you lay on your back, flat, palms facing up, closing your eyes, focusing on your breathing, and trying to be calm. And it's easy to do because your body is no longer screaming or itching or your legs fidgeting or you have pins and needles. All of that has been worked out through the yoga poses. And now you can relax. You can refocus on your inside. This is how the whole idea is supposed to work. Now, there's nothing wrong with simply stretching, contracting, and relaxing your various muscles, and in meanwhile building strength and balance. But at the deeper level, it should represent the full expression of your mind and body integration. And so, and how do you do that? This is when you're in Shavasana, you'd normally be able to be consciously aware of the flow of the energy in your body is now fluid, open, and everything circulates well. So the practice is to encourage you to perform every action in life with awareness. So there's over 84,000 different yoga poses. And some of them are the different step of the the posture getting more and more elaborate and complicated. So it's not about the yoga positions, the yoga structure was never about losing weight or building muscles. It was always about the mind-body-spirit connection. And so if you're already practicing yoga, now you can put more emphasis on this aspect. Instead of just focusing, am I stretching big enough and am I erected big enough? You're supposed to listen to your body. The whole point is that through a regular practice, your body will stretch more, get stronger, and you'll be able to get into these poses and build up and go to the more advanced poses. But you should never outdo yourself. It's not about proving anything to anyone. It's really about being in your body, connecting to your mental state, emotional state, and working through the energy flow. And so going into energy flow, there's also Qigong and Tai Chi. Now, they're both traditional Chinese movement exercise, and they increase your Qi. So Qi is energy, all right? It's a different word. It's a Chinese word for energy flow. And overall, it's meant to improve your health through gentle, graceful, and repeated movement. So this is why I love this, because anyone can do this. It's actually very calming for young children who seem to be very active because they're still moving. You're not asking them to sit still, but you're asking them to focus on their movement and reproduce the movement. So it helps calming them down, but it also, anybody can join in. Someone who's in a wheelchair, someone who is not as mobile, because the movement are so slow and the movement are encouraging this graceful movement, it allows them to participate, feel part of, and is not limiting anybody's participation. And again, it's built on increasing strength and increasing ability and increasing flexibility. So the more you practice it, the more you become graceful at it. And then it becomes like a slow moving dance with this energy that you're slowly moving and building around you. So it's based on two main ideas, right? The energy, the Qi flows through your body along energetic pathways. It's called the meridian. So we talked about that last month when we talked about acupressure and acupuncture. And if the flow of Qi is blocked or imbalanced, that's when the illness was resolved. So through the Tai Chi and the Qigong, the idea is that your body is an entire universe. And it consists of these forces of yin and yang. And through the Tai Chi and the Qigong, we're balancing this yin and yang in your body. We're restoring good health as a result of this balance. And the movement are specifically targeting this yin and this yang. So they'll be pushing, they'll be pulling, there'll be movement, and there'll be stability. So Tai Chi and Qigong differ in practice in the way of the energy manipulation and the body posture, but the idea is the same. Both practice improve posture, balance, coordination, endurance, and flexibility. So we'll talk about Qigong first. Qigong aims to cultivate vital Qi energy over time. So meaning you build up energy, you have more of it. The Qigong is pronounced Qigong, and it was developed in China thousands of years ago as part of the traditional Chinese medicine system. So again, just like the yoga, it's not just one part, right? There's many elements in the traditional Chinese medicine that encompasses the health of a body or the health of an individual. Right? As much as is what the food you put in, the drinks you put in, the movements that you do, but also this stillness and mindness and consciousness of your mental state, emotional state, linking it to your body. So the goal of improving and maintaining health and well-being is optimized by using the Qigong exercise. In its description, Qigong is both psychological and physical component that is involved in regulating the mind, the breath, and the body's movement and posture. So it's a balance of all these four things. So as you can see, the breath plays a very important role. Why is the breath so important? Well, when you think about it, you have a heart, and your heart is pumping blood all over your body. But inside this blood, it's not the fact that it's just pumping blood that's important. It's what's inside the blood. And inside this blood is the oxygen. So if you're not breathing appropriately, if you can't take your breath and have this oxygen circulate, your functions, your body functions will eventually either die off, or parts of you, if the nutrients are not going into your different parts of your body, they shut down. And so I invite you to try this. Next time you're feeling low on energy, feeling like you're losing focus at work, and you think maybe you should go get coffee to wake yourself up, before you do any of that, you take 3 minutes and take nice deep breaths. Now, a deep breath, if you've ever looked at a newborn breathing, they breathe from their diaphragm. So they're using their entire lungs to be able to fill them with air and then exhale. Having a deep breath doesn't mean that you're filling your chest. It means that you're filling your entire lungs. And so therefore, your diaphragm will push down as your lungs get filled with air. Taking these deep breaths allows all of a sudden an energy to enter you, to wake up and give you energy. in a spiritual practice, just like a whale will open its mouth and swallow a bunch of water, it's not living off the water, it's living off the plankton that's inside the water. In the same way, we need to open up and allow this energy to come in order to have the nutrients, the spiritual nutrients that we need. And that comes from our breathing. That's why yoga focuses on breathing, and that's why Qigong and Tai Chi focus on breathing. They recognize that there's more than air in what we're breathing, and it fills up with this energy. And so now you can easily join a Qigong group or take a class. You can just practice the movement section of it, or you could really go into learning all of what Qigong is all about. It just depends on how involved you want to get in this practice, right? There's different forms of Qigong, so not everybody is practicing exactly the same. It's just like karate. There's different branches of karate. It's all falling under the umbrella of karate, but there's different schools and thoughts, so Qigong is the same. But in most forms of Qigong, the breath is slow, long, and deep. Breath patterns may switch from abdominal breathing, which is what I was, obviously you don't breathe from your abdominals. You breathe because your diaphragm gets pushed down and it feels like your stomach moves out, right? But it's all using your full lungs to breathe. And also you could have breathing combined with speech sounds. So like ocean breath or we're thought that we shouldn't make sound. Right? You should chew with your mouth closed. You shouldn't make noise. Making noise is considered irreverent. However, feels a lot better when you can just let that fart out and makes a noise, right? And if you're young, everybody giggles. If you're adult, everybody gasps. But the sound of breathing allows for displacements in your throat, in your vocal cords, in your lungs, for things that allow for a deeper breathing, or instead of the shallow breathing that we're trying to do all the time. The movements on Qigong are typically gentle, smooth, and aimed for relaxation, right? Again, it's not that you won't get stronger, because if you don't move your arms, like the friend I talked about at the beginning of the recording, she was not moving. So she's not using her muscles. Right? That the only muscles that was working was her thumb put a remote and her phone. So just by these gentle, smooth movements, she did eventually build strength and stamina. So we have this false idea that we need to go and pump higher and hard to get those muscles. It's not necessary. The fact that you're actually moving, the fact that you're actually using these muscles that in everyday movement you wouldn't be using, it reinforces those muscles and allows them to stay healthy and strong. And Qigong focuses on mind regulation. What does that mean? so They don't specifically call it a meditation because it's in movement. But it helps focus your attention and visualization. So it's a form of meditation, if you ask me, right? It's allowing to clear your mind. So sometimes life throws at us more than we think we can handle, right? Or things don't get resolved as quickly as we want them to get resolved. And so we have a long to-do list of things that is basically outside of our control. We're waiting on other people to finish their bit so that we can continue moving forward. But all of these ideas, all of these thoughts are occupying our mind constantly, and we're unable to focus on anything else because it feels like our mind is so cluttered with all these ideas that there's just no way forward. There's just nowhere else to go. The mind is full. So Qigong allows us to regulate these thoughts. And instead of having this tornado in your head, it allows you to take the subject and say, okay, so I can't deal with this until I hear from that. And it allows you to put them on the shelf, not ignoring them, but saying at the moment, I can't do anything with this. So I'll clear my mind of these things, put them on hold while creating space for what I should be doing or the new creativity or new job I should tackle and allow you to function, right? In the everyday basis tasks and things. Common Qigong movement include raising and lowering of the arms, movement of the head from side to side. It could be gently rubbing the ears, the feet, the hand. So it's within the realm of absolutely anybody. Now, Tai Chi is the best known and most popular moving form of Qigong. So it falls under the umbrella of Qigong. But it's a very specific type of movement that is going to gain its own popularity. And so people don't always know that, you know, by doing Tai Chi, you're doing Qigong. But Qigong has more different ways of movement and theory behind it. So Tai Chi is the practice that involves a series of slow, gentle movements and physical posture, which you do standing up. A meditative state of mind and a controlled breathing. I encourage you to watch, if you have the time, a Tai Chi video. And some do that with swords, some just use their hands, but I find it beautiful. I find the beauty of the flow, of the grace of the movement. They're dancing with energy. It's beautiful to watch. And after you watch the video, you'll understand that, like anything else, if you take the time to practice and learn it, anyone can do this. You don't require to be physically strong or a particular kind of athlete to do this. Anybody, any age can do this. It's very repetitive, and there's only a set series of movements. So once you've learned your whole set of movements, you can practice this anywhere, and it requires very little space. So there's the cost effective, because you don't need to buy a whole bunch of materials or anything like that. And you can do this as long as you have a little bit of space in any kind of room. So you can do this in a bedroom, a living room. You don't need a dedicated room for it. You just need a little bit of space in that room to be able to practice. This gentle form of exercise helps you maintain flexibility and balance, but also strengthen your muscles as you're moving your arms without having to have weight in your arms. For people who have not been doing a lot of exercise, just these movement of arms will help strengthen them, right? So it's a perfect activity that can actually be performed for decades. It doesn't damage any joints. Your aging process will be reduced. And no matter how old you are, you can keep doing this because it's so gentle. Yes? Because it has low impact and its slow motion allow you to go through the movement without causing injuries or inflaming any old injuries. It's interesting because a lot of the names are based on animal actions, like the white crane spreads its wings. So it kind of tells us stories, right? and some Tai Chi has been formed as, could be, I guess, a form of training for martial arts. But it depends who's your teacher. Yes. So some teacher will focus more on the spiritual aspect of it, and other teachers will explain that this movement is a defensive movement. But overall, as you move and you breathe deeply and you're focusing your attention on the fluidity of the movement of your hands and fingers positions, it is a meditation. And it helps you find a method of introspection that allows you to get deeper within. And I think the idea is to recognize that all of those therapies are to deal with what's inside. And dealing what's inside is difficult because there's no doors that we can open and just pull something out, right? So we're using these movement, this music, these sounds to access what's inside and then allow us to analyze it, understand it, live it, whatever it is, right? It's, but I particularly like Tai Chi because the movements allow older people to join. And I think in our society today, a lot of the fads are made for the young. And it seems to always kind of exclude people that are not in top shape and that are not able to bend so easily. So I think that personally, I would enjoy doing that with, people from different ages and bringing the people back together. I think there's something healthy and holistic in that as well. Bridging the gaps of the different generation. It is something that three different generations can do together. I think that is also important. The social aspect of how we maintain our health and how we stay connected with each other. And the advantages is that the muscles tend to be relaxed rather than tensed, which could cause more injury. And the joints are never fully extended or bent. So you don't need great physical flexibility or great strength to be able to do Tai Chi. It also, you can adapt it. Just like yoga can actually be adapted to pregnant women, to elderly people, people in wheelchair. You can do yoga on the chair. You can do mudra. You can just do yoga with your hands, right? Tai Chi is easily adaptable and fits most people. So I find it's a great way to get moving, right? Now, hi Janine, nice to see you. We're going to talk about the Feldenkrais method. I'm sorry if I massacred the name. Feldenkrais, I think, method. It's a registered method, and it was designed by Moshe Feldenkrais. He passed away in 1984 at 80 years of age, and he was aiming to develop a holistically eating modality to improve body movement in function, efficiency, and comfort. So what does that look like? He says that he's developed this method for people who suffered repetitive strains, injury, in order to promote their healing and of the joints and other weak points. And it's through the results of manipulation. And it proved to be, in general, a great improvement on the well-being as a whole. The Feldenkrais method is considered part of an integrative complementary medicine. So according to him, good health is founded on good function. So what does that mean? You guys know I have a 99-year-old aunt, and she's can't move well. And because she can't move well, she's moving less. And because she's moving less, it's becoming harder and harder to move at all. So Feldenkrais said that if our body is meant to move and we keep it moving, it will help stay in good health. Well, at the same time, the Chinese were saying if your meridian are blocked and the energy is no longer circulating, you can't expect it to continue doing the function it was doing before. So it's along the same line, right? He believed that self-education was central to the practice. So it wasn't about just relying on someone else to do everything for you. There is a part of you that has to learn and then practice these movements. There are scientific studies that confirm the effectiveness of the Feldenkrais method, so that's why I included it. So the quote from Moshe Feldenkrais is, "We move according to our perceived self-image." And I think that was kind of a bit of a mind-blowing, right? Because I'm looking at my aunt and she says, "Well, I can't walk well." And because she doesn't think she can't walk well, she doesn't walk well because she's not confident that she can walk well. But Feldenkrais said that by expanding our perception and increasing our awareness, I can become more aware of my habits and my tension and develop new ways of moving, which I think is the idea, right? If you had an injury, you haven't used, my brother broke his arm and it was locked in a cast. And he took off the cast and he was like, "Wow, I really gotta stretch my arm. I gotta make the movement. It's like my arm hasn't stretched in a while. It's been, the 90-degree angle. And now I have to bring my arm to full extension." And he couldn't do that at first. It took repetitiveness, right? Some of you are gonna say, "Oh, well, that's physiotherapy." It's close enough in a, general sense. However, Feldenkrais is teaching the people to become aware of their movement and discover where does the stress and the strain happen. I had shoulder pain. I couldn't figure out why is my shoulder hurting? I haven't done anything particularly important with my shoulder that it should be in pain. And then I was observing myself and I realized that when I'm driving, I'll often drive with my hand across and my hand should be at 10 o'clock rather than 1 o'clock. And I started driving differently, positioning my arms differently, and I realized that the pain went away. So that's a bit what Feldenkrais was trying to teach people. A certain movement that we may do because they're repetitive or because they're limited in the way that we apply them, when we're asking our arms or legs or the rest of our body to move differently, our body's going, "Well, hey, I'm not used to moving this fashion. What are you asking me to do right now?" Right? And so you acting on this information to re-educate your nervous system, saying, "No, it's okay if I go this way, if it's okay if I go up," right? And so practicing different movements outside of your regular repetitive movement. I would think that that would affect a lot of people, like if you're on a chain where you just do this all day. That's that you're every time something shows up, and that's all you do. So eventually, your body is stressed in these muscles that are being used, and all the other ones that are not being used are being weakened by the effect that they're not being used, right? It's that's the balance we're talking about, right? So this awareness, the through movement, right, is related to practice that involves thinking, sensing, moving, and imagining. As opposed to the functional integration, the practitioner then is helped to do certain movement in a certain way. So if you're not used to, I guess it would look a lot like physiotherapy, right? So when I broke my hand, the physiotherapist would move my fingers because they couldn't move on their own. So we had to re-educate the fingers to bend, and then meanwhile trying to me be you know trying to do the bending, but since I could only go this far, she was helping me get to the end, right? So pursuing the movement that I'm trying to accomplish that I can't accomplish on my own, someone is helping me complete this movement. So the idea is to experience greater freedom of movement. So, the method has proven itself especially beneficial to musicians and also athletes and children, people with special needs, people with suffering with degenerative disease. So it applies to a wide range of people. But I would say that it's not necessarily limited to just these cases. I think that anyone who has a loss of movement or a loss of flexibility or use of any of their body parts, you can re-educate yourself. It's not something that's obviously going to happen overnight and it's going to be done in 5 minutes. It requires repetition. It requires for you to stay focused on task, but it's doable. right? So the awareness through movement, they're usually taught in the group setting, and you follow the verbal instructions of a teacher. As opposed to the functional integration, that's usually more one-on-one. You are guided through the movement and verbal instruction as to what to do. I don't know if a lot of you know this, but I at one point in my life suffered greatly because I was diagnosed with fibromyalgia, so I had a lot of pain. And I joined a pain clinic that taught me that, first of all, scar tissue can be healed. So it's not because you have scar tissue that you're stuck with scar tissue for the rest of your life. However, when your tissue heals, and let's say, like for example, when I broke my hand was stretched as much as they could, so it would heal in the stretch position. But there's scar tissue, right? And the scar tissue has healed a certain way. But after you do the movement, the scar tissue can be replaced with actually healthy living tissue. What? Right? So we can change our bodies. And it's not because we had an injury and our arm can't go any higher than it is. That through this this functional integration and the awareness through the movement, that you eventually are not able to go higher and move wider and restore your mobility and your strength because your scar tissue gets replaced. So don't get discouraged out there. If you think that movement is a challenge for you, the opposite of what we think, it hurts, I don't want to move. Yeah, without hurting yourself more and with patience and with small increments, you can restore all of your movement back to where they were. However, should you not be able to move just yet, movement therapy can be done in silence, but it doesn't require necessarily the use of music. However, as we move, music can help us unlock our emotion and direct the movement in, you know, like I said at the beginning with ritual dancing. But music alone can be a beneficial tool to access your blockages. Music therapy uses music in all its facets, physical, emotional, mental, social, aesthetic, spiritual, to help the patients improve and maintain their health. So what does that look like? That could go from simply listening to it to actually playing, banging on drums, to expressing or developing ideas, imagery coming from the different music being played. Research has shown that music has a profound effect on the body and the mind. Again, I hope that by now you're seeing the link, right? This is all about not just your physical body, but your mind, your spirit, your soul, your emotions. They're all interconnected. So everything that has to do with movement, music, dance, sounds, it's based on this idea that everything is interconnected. And I think it's easier to see with the music because, you know, you'll hear songs. And if it's a song you haven't heard in a long time, you say, oh, I listened to this when I was a kid. You'll laugh. I listened to this when I broke up with my boyfriend. I played that song day and night for 3 months. But, you know, we recognize the use of the sound and the use of the music to get us through some emotional hurdle. And it can be applied at any time in our life. So it can be reapplied later on. If you're able to continue listening to this song, remembering how you got over the breakup, but you're no longer affected emotionally by it, that means you went through it. And you successfully went through your emotion. It's no longer being a blockage for you. However, should it put you back in the state where you were, then that means you're still working through the emotion, the mental state that you're trying to work through. So the technique works with individuals of all ages, right? And a variety of conditions such as psychiatric disorders, medical problems, physical handicaps, social sensory impairment, developmental disabilities, substance abuse, communication disorder, interpersonal problem, and aging. I love nothing more than to see older people hearing music from their time. And they lit up. They lit up like a Christmas tree. Their eyes become bright. They remember this feeling they had when they were younger. It makes them relive this emotion And this emotion, they were alive, they were full of fire, it wakes them up. So it works to counteract this feeling of I can't connect anymore, because that music still exists, it's still accessible, right? So we can allow them to access this music, which I think it's sad, right? Because they used to have all these records, right? But now they don't have the records, and they think I don't have the records anymore, I don't have the music anymore. But the music is still there. We just got to help them access it and help them relive these fantastic moments, these great moment of joy. And then it also triggers their memory, and it creates them a moment for sharing, a moment of connection outside of the regular interactions that you would be having. Yes. Bring music to any kids and they will be wanting to be a part of it. They'll want to play the music, they'll want to dance to the music, they'll twirl, they'll spin, they'll jump. I mean, we can learn best, I think, is from children. Before we start judging them, before we try to fit them in a box, they have this free spirit of expression, and it's magnificent, right? And if we can do that with young children, we can do that with people of any age. I remember that when I was studying, I would study with music, and when I was trying to do my exams and I would recall the information, I would recall the music I was studying to at the same time I was studying this particular subject matter. Music triggers parts of your brains that help you with memory. And so being able to trigger that years later, you can recall things based on the same sounds or the same music. So music therapy improves your learning. It does help build your self-esteem, reduce stress, and support physical exercise, and improve in a host of other health-related activities. I mean, think about it. I don't know about anybody else, but when I was angry, I'd listen to AC/DC, and I'd bang my head, and I'd just like yell and scream and jump, and I'd get my anger out. It helped me just let it out so that I could then refocus and say, okay, how am I going to handle this? Be angry is one thing, but if you can't get past the anger to get to the solution, then you need to just get this anger out. In the same way that we listen to those sad songs and those love songs to cry to get over a breakup. Why do we do that? And some people are like, well, this is dumb. Why make yourself cry? Why do that? Because the overwhelming of the emotion becomes such a heavy weight that nothing else can take place. You have your physical body, but within your physical body and outside this physical body, you have the emotional body and the mental body and the spiritual body. And when one of them can't move anymore, it impedes the movement of all the other bodies. So by using music to purge, this is a great word, to purge the emotion out of your emotional body so that your emotional body can be free again and allow all the other bodies to move freely as one, right? So in the same sense, I don't know if you've ever used that technique when you were learning, but some people will create a word in order to remember the five parts of what they're trying to study. Music, studying with music also helps memorize things better. So all of these things is affecting a whole lot of different parts in their brains. And this is where it affects the mental, because if your brain is affected, your brain is regulating your physical body, they all are interconnected. So if one feels better, automatically the effect will be felt elsewhere. So as usual, if you have any questions, don't wait until the end. You can throw your questions in. I would be happy to answer them as we go along. And you can subscribe to the channel on YouTube or on Facebook, so you'll know when our next one is. And if we can reach 1,000 people on YouTube, it would be fantastic. So don't hesitate to share this video with your friends if you think that someone could be helped with the idea of dancing, music, movement, that it could make someone's life better. Go ahead and share, right? Now, where is the actual music therapy? Now, there's something that you can do on your own that, without knowing we were doing music therapy with ourselves, but there's actually music therapists who worked in general hospitals, psychiatric facilities, they work in schools, they work in prisons, they work in community centers, in training institutes, and have private practices. So they're in a wide range of location and kind of level of interventions that you can access them and work with them. Now, in each of the sessions, the patient will be introduced to a musical experience that may involve improvising, recreating, composing, or just listening to the music. So there's all these different ways to work with music therapy. The music therapists believe that all individuals, regardless of age or musical background, have a basic capacity for musical expression and appreciation. I remember this game when I played when I was a teenager, or college maybe. Someone says, well, let's test your musical ear. So we were listening to Spring, believed by Vivaldi, and he doesn't tell me what it is, but we're playing this music, and I'm sitting there, and I'm like, well, it makes me feel like a burst of fresh air. It makes me feel right. I didn't know that it was called Spring, but what awoke in me was the element of spring. And then we listened to Winter, and I said, oh, it feels dark, feels cold. If it's, you know, and in the summer, it feels joyful, it feels warm. So anyone who takes the time to listen to different types of music can, at the very least, get an appreciation of what's being played and what it's evoking for them. Now, that's obviously outside the fact that if that music was associated with something else. In Clockwork Orange, the movie, the young man is trained to stay calm with good music. And when there's violence, they're using the violent music to dissociate him from violence. And so it's very interesting that any type of, you know, it wasn't a particular song, but that particular type of violent song would create a massive reaction to him after this brainwashing technique they used on him. So if it can work that way, it can work the opposite, right? We can learn to calm our mind. We can, for my children, it was bedtime. I like to play the same song every night because that was their, oh, I'm going to sleep. I need to calm down. I need to breathe. And they're gone, right? So this ritual of allowing your body to say, when I hear this song, this is when I'm calm. So you train at calming your body when with the song. It's a lot like the Pavlov's response, right? The dogs are being called for food and there's a bell and they salivate at the food. And eventually they don't need the food. They just need to hear the bell. And while hearing the bell, they start salivating because that means to them, I'm going to get food. In the same way, you can use the sounds to train yourself that whenever this sound is playing, this is when I recenter myself and this is when I am calm and I am safe, or, you know, whatever the pattern that you want to create within you can be associated with music, bells, or specific songs, or just sounds of nature, for example. You could also train with that, right? You put the sounds. You're living in a city, but you record the sound while you're on a trip. And then whenever things get too hectic in the city, you can listen to that sound that you recorded and visualize yourself back being in the forest. That's all music therapy. That's what it is, right? It's association. All right. So it's the therapist that will select the music and the method according to the patient's specific needs and ability. But in my particular field, I would say that I use the music as much as and the sound in order to be able to restore someone's peace, someone's quietness, to allow them to use that part of their brain to stop all other activities that are bothering them or their anxiety rising or anything like that. They have a specific song or sound that they've been training with that allows them to more effectively restore the peaceful moment they're looking for. And as music is to our brains, it does enter through our ears. And music has the ability to affect the entire body from, you know, movement, tapping, clapping. But there's also another therapy that is specifically designed as an auditory integration training. Now, this one has you know, some people say it works, it doesn't work. Some people doubt their effectiveness, but it's very specific training. It's a procedure that claims to be effective against clinical depression, suicide tendencies, dyslexia, and autism. Someone who has dyslexia or someone that has speech disability will often learn to either sing and or follow a certain tempo when they speak, so they allow themselves to talk, and it defeats stutter and other things, right? So music and rhythm and tempo has been used for a lot of those things. But the auditory integration training, it works, involves 20 half-hour session over 10 days, so like twice a day for 30 minutes. The patients will listen through headphones to specifically filtered and modulated music within a wide frequency of ranges. Now, technically, the electronic device switches randomly between low and high frequency sounds, but to be effective, it's the one that is connected to your brainwaves. So there are certain brainwaves that are calculated as, you know, if you hit a certain frequency in your brainwaves, you're depressed. If you hit a certain frequency, you've lost your focus, you've lost your attention. And so these bursts of sounds and these frequency that last between a quarter of a second to 2 seconds are there to restore the brain waves to a certain level that is above the depression level, the inattention level, the lack of focus level. And so the sound's intensity will vary and create that modulating effect that is basically training your brain to remain at a second level of frequency of vibration of positive and focus and attention. So the volume is set as loud as possible without causing discomfort, and the sound waves exercise their effect on the middle ear. So it's a vibrational retain, right? Audiologists, speech language pathologists, and others have debated the merit of this training. But anecdotal reports suggest that when used on individual diagnosed with autism, pervasive developmental disorder, learning difficulties, attention deficit disorder, dyslexia, it resulted in a higher tolerance to sounds. Now, if you don't know much about these different disorders, autism, usually a sound will be, they have a very, very acute hearing. So sounds will affect them greatly. So this developing tolerance to sound helps them not be going into shock or going into an episode because the sound has startled them and they can't deal with all the different incoming sounds of a busiest classroom or area, public area. It says that it increases attention span, better eye contact, social awareness, fewer tantrums, better verbalization, improve auditory comprehension and articulation. And so I find that if it's paired, now if it's just sound, I don't know how efficient that would be, but paired with the brainwaves calculation and restoring healthy patterns of the brain, I would think that just like the one we'll examine next week would be efficient and might work. But there's debates on that one, so we need more scientific studies. Now, the other way to use sound without necessarily having movement, but using sound to calm the body, here at the center, we have sound baths. You can do it. You can do it in many different ways. We do vision quests with drums, but we do sound baths with Tibetan bowls and with crystal bowls. The idea is that you're letting the vibration of these bowls or the drums carry you on these waves of frequency to restore balance within your body. You have nothing to do, which is lovely. You can just sit there, but these vibrations flow through your body and restore a healthy balance and restore the healthy frequency. Now, this is all obviously, the whole this theory is going back to the fact that you're energetic beings. You're made of energy. And so your energy should be balanced. It should work along a peaceful vibrational frequency. When stress or other things in your everyday life comes and barges in and destroy this beautiful frequency, one of the ways that to restore it is to be immersed into these sound baths of vibrations, and you can listen to them. We do have them for sale on their website, but you can also be a part of it. We do group meditation, and we're not the only ones doing this. Sound baths are not all over the world. I have a very great friend of mine who's doing it in Australia. I have people I know do it in Seattle and Vancouver. So it's all over the place now. It's a thing. And it's something worth a try, but I find it to be effective. If you're relying on it to restore your frequency, you need to be pretty consistent with the application of these sound baths. So we do them every 2 weeks. We follow the cycle of the moon, and we find that that's a nice regulatory vibrational. It helps you restore, and you're not too much out of phase. So every 2 weeks you get rephase until you are pretty much able to stay within that frequency on your own. So for therapy, or simply improving the body, some therapies are targeting those with disabilities, injuries, or health issues. However, it in itself, they can be tools for those who are healthy, but could improve their health with their enjoyment of either the music, meditation, or more spiritual connection through movement, right? So it applies to so many of us out there. I teach meditation, and often people are adverse to the idea that they don't want to sit for an hour in silence trying to clear their mind while their mind is just running 100 miles an hour, right? But tonight you've learned that the connection can be achieved through movement, through music, through dance, and that everyone is able to find this connection. I have a quote here by Pierre Teilhard de Chardin, who says, "We are not human beings having a spiritual experience. We are spiritual beings having a human experience." Teilhard de Chardin was a French philosopher, paleontologist, and a Jesuit priest who thought deeply on the meaning of our existence and our relationship to the divine. And so all these ideas are a great start to build that connection, to be aware, become aware, or celebrate the fact that you're more than just a human. You're spirit, your soul, your higher self, right? So I don't think there's just one method that can answer all of your questions. I think that the door to your higher self has many, many doors that all lead to the very center, which is you. I would say, like, picture a soccer ball, and that all these little pentagons on the soccer ball are different doors. So one door could be through music, the other door could be through psychotherapy, the other door could be meditation. There's many, many doors. We're not limited to one technique or just the one way to your inner self. This self-exploration, this introspection, this understanding of who you are is best done or accomplished by the mean that reflects you and attracts you and resonates with you. Socrates says, "Men, know thyself," because he was mostly talking to men. I'm sure he should have said, "Human, know thyself." But what he truly meant, that it's the sum of our experiences, our successes, our failures, our wound, our joy, that makes us who we are today. So, but who we are today, is that the best that we can be? Are we really the best that we can be? And part of it has to do with the fact that we're carrying this backpack, which contains anger, resentment, judgment, grief, and whatever else is put in there, right? And some of it may be directed at others, right? Some of us are angry at others for some reason, but it also, some of it can be directed at us, which leads us to self-sabotage. Personally, I find that working with emotion can be difficult, right? An emotion that is felt is an emotion that's dismissed. But first of all, how do you find these emotions? How do you empty this backpack? You're going through, you're trying to clear out the residual buried emotions inside of you, But you're looking into a see-through backpack with intangible emotions. So there's nothing to grasp, right? It's not like you're cleaning your house. You see the garbage, you take the garbage, you put it in the garbage can, you're cleaning. But how do you go to grab these emotions and figure out what are they? First, it's easier if you can bring it to the surface. And I find that movement, music, dance, sounds allow you to bring these emotions to the surface. And you know, if for those of you that are, you know, terrified that it's going to erupt like a volcano and it's going to be like submerged by all these emotions, that's not usually how it works. Usually one will come to the surface. One particular song, one particular sound will awaken an emotion, just one. And then allows you to use whichever method you decide to use to go through this emotion, to identify it, to untangle it, and to see how your present day actions, thinking, and belief are influenced by this emotion. Let's say you're angry, right? And so everything that happens just is filtered by this anger. So rather than wearing see-through glasses, you're wearing anger glasses. So everything in your life is being influenced by this anger that is inside of you, in your backpack, and is tainting, you know, your perception of what's really taking place. While you go through all this trouble of clearing this anger, you become free. You free yourself of this emotion, and it's freeing from your past, and you stop wearing these tainted glasses, and you can now see the experience without the filter of anger. And then you can see, okay, well, this, I guess, I don't know why I was so angry about this. There's not, you know, this doesn't apply to my experience from 10 years ago. This is different. I had a friend recently post on Facebook, if your heart gets broken by an event, by someone, by something, can it be really, truly healed? And my answer was, because a lot of people are saying, time heals everything. I don't think that time is actually what's healing. I think that what's healing is the fact that you stop burying this situation deeper and deeper inside of you. And with detachment, as time has passed, you're able to understand the situation better, know what role you played in that situation, and understand what you had to learn from it, right? Because nothing happens for nothing. Everything has a reason. That's the way the universe works. And understanding your responsibility that you played in that role. An example of that is I stayed married longer than I should. And I tell people, you know, it's my fault. And like, well, you know, how is that your fault? I said, because it was my fear that was preventing me from going. I take responsibility of the fact that I wasn't tied in the basement. Nobody chained me there. I could have left any time, but I was afraid. I was insecure. I had, so that's on me. You know what I mean? So I didn't leave sooner, but eventually I did. And we tend to, you know, judging ourselves really harshly. But everything is so much easier in hindsight. And you're like, well, if I do this again, I would do this completely differently. And that's the good news. Because that means you learned something. That means you grew. That means that you won't repeat the same mistakes you made before. You won't put yourself in these either dangerous or stupid situations. And you should love yourself for that. You should forgive your old self and admire the self that you become. A lot of people say, well, you need to apologize and I'll forgive you. But how often do we actually apologize to our own self? Now, when I wrote my biography, I realized through this writing that a lot of my decisions, good or bad, I was alone making them. I didn't have a great support group. I didn't have anybody to confide into. And I was making this decision as best as I could. And back then there was no internet. So it wasn't as easy as you think to get information or find resources. And, you know, I made life harder for myself at some point, right? But now I know that I have to love this young 18-year-old me because she tried her best. She tried her hardest. And every day she got up and she kept trying and she didn't quit, which got me where I am today, right? So I I don't even think I need to forgive her. I just need to love her, really. And that's what we need to do. But we can't do that if we're angry or resentful or still, you know, hanging on to things that are 10, 20, 30 years old. We have to examine those with fresh eyes, eyes outside of these emotions. So hopefully you're able to filter through your emotions and to look at yourself with new set of eyes. Eyes that are not tainted by the pain or the violence or the anger or the resentment. And just really have a look and say, you know, I wouldn't repeat that. I'm a different person now. And allowing it to let go, release it, and be free. So I think that when you can let it go and you find a peace, you'll understand. If you can do that with just one emotion and you see the benefit of it, then you will start this entire process to empty this backpack and just be in the moment, be in the present. Healing comes from the growth of the human, realizing that they're so much more than just molecules, that they're alive with the divine spark inside their body. So if you can realize that and be connected with that, I think that that's where the greatest healing comes from and the greatest freedom comes from. So hopefully tonight was fun. Hopefully you enjoy these now monthly podcasts, which are a lot easier on me. And next month, we'll be pursuing our exploration of alternative medicine. And as much as, you know, with music, we feel with our entire body, what we hear with our ears, next month, I'll be talking and exploring things with our eyes, healing through art, colors, lights, and realizing that it's not just our eyes that are feeling the vibrations of light and color, but our entire body, right? So I'll go into that exploration next month. So if there are any questions, now's a good time. But either I'm very good or I don't know, there's no questions. But I see there's people watching. So I want to thank you all for listening and watching. And know that if you put your comments, even after this video has been posted, I always take a time to read them and respond because I appreciate your support. So with love and light, and I'll see you in April. Thank you.